19. A Warning from Mercury. It was the first time in weeks that every member of the Rama Committee had made himself available. Professor Solomons had emerged from the depths of the Pacific, where he had been studying mining operations along the mid-ocean trenches, and to nobody's surprise, Dr. Taylor had reappeared, now that there was at least a possibility that Rama held something more newsworthy than lifeless artifacts. The chairman had fully expected Dr. Pereira to be even more dogmatically assertive than usual, now that his prediction of a Raman hurricane had been confirmed. To His Excellency's great surprise, Pereira was remarkably subdued, and accepted the congratulations of his colleagues in a manner as near to embarrassment as he was ever likely to achieve. The exobiologist was, in fact, deeply mortified. The spectacular breakup of the cylindrical sea was a much more obvious phenomenon than the hurricane winds, yet he had completely overlooked it. To have remembered that hot air rises, but to have forgotten that hot ice contracts, was not an achievement of which he could be very proud. However, he would soon get over it and revert to his normal Olympian self-confidence. When the chairman offered him the floor and asked what further climatic changes he expected, he was careful to hedge his bets. "You must realize," he explained, "that the meteorology of a world as strange as Rama may have many other surprises. But if my calculations are correct, there will be no further storms, and conditions will soon be stable. There will be a slow temperature rise until perihelion and beyond, but that won't concern us, because Endeavour will have had to leave long before then."
"So it should soon be safe to go back inside?"
Probably. We should certainly know in 48 hours.
"A return is imperative," said the ambassador from Mercury. "We have to learn everything we possibly can about Rama. The situation has now changed completely."
"I think we know what you mean, but would you care to elaborate?"
"Of course. Until now, we have assumed that Rama is lifeless, or at any rate uncontrolled. But we can no longer pretend that it is a derelict. Even if there are no life forms aboard, it may be directed by robot mechanisms, programmed to carry out some mission, perhaps one highly disadvantageous to us. Unpalatable though it may be, we must consider the question of self-defense."
There was a babble of protesting voices, and the chairman had to hold up his hand to restore order.
"Let His Excellency finish," he pleaded. "Whether we like the idea or not, it should be considered seriously."
"With all due respect to the ambassador," said Taylor in his most disrespectful voice, "I think we can rule out as naive the fear of malevolent intervention. Creatures as advanced as the Ramans must have correspondingly developed morals, otherwise they would have destroyed themselves, as we nearly did in the 20th century. I've made that quite clear in my new book, Ethos and Cosmos. I hope you received your copy."
"Yes, thank you, though I'm afraid the pressure of other matters has not allowed me to read beyond the introduction. However, I'm familiar with the general thesis. We may have no malevolent intentions toward an antheap, but if we want to build a house on the same site..."
"This is as bad as the Pandora Party. It's nothing less than interstellar xenophobia."
"Please, gentlemen, this is getting us nowhere. Mr. Ambassador, you still have the floor."
The chairman glared across 380,000 kilometers of space at Conrad Taylor, who reluctantly subsided, like a volcano biding its time.
"Thank you," said the ambassador from Mercury. "The danger may be unlikely, but where the future of the human race is involved, we can take no chances. And, if I may say so, we Hermians may be particularly concerned. We may have more cause for alarm than anyone else."
Taylor snorted audibly.
but was quelled by another glare from the moon. "Why Mercury, more than any other planet?" asked the chairman.
"Look at the dynamics of the situation. Rama is already inside our orbit. It is only an assumption that it will go around the sun and head on out again into space. Suppose it carries out a braking maneuver. If it does so, this will be at perihelion, about 30 days from now. My scientists tell me that if the entire velocity change is carried out there, Rama will end up in a circular orbit only 25 million kilometers from the sun. From there, it could dominate the solar system."
For a long time, nobody, not even Taylor, spoke a word. All the members of the committee were marshaling their thoughts about those difficult people, the Hermians, so ably represented here by their ambassador. To most people, Mercury was a fairly good approximation of hell. At least, it would do until something worse came along. But the Hermians were proud of their bizarre planet, with its days longer than its years, its double sunrises and sunsets, its rivers of molten metal. By comparison, the Moon and Mars had been almost trivial challenges. Not until men landed on Venus, if they ever did, would they encounter an environment more hostile than that of Mercury. And yet this world had turned out to be, in many ways, the key to the solar system. This seemed obvious in retrospect, but the space age had been almost a century old before the fact was realized. Now, the Hermians never let anyone forget it. Long before men reached the planet, Mercury's abnormal density hinted at the heavy elements it contained. Even so, its wealth was a source of astonishment, and had postponed for 1,000 years any fears that the key metals of human civilization would be exhausted. And these treasures were in the best possible place, where the power of the sun was 10 times greater than on frigid Earth. Unlimited energy, unlimited metal, that was Mercury. Its great magnetic launchers could catapult manufactured products to any point in the solar system. It could also export energy in synthetic transuranium isotopes or pure radiation. It had even been proposed that Hermian lasers would one day thaw out gigantic Jupiter, but this idea had not been well received on the other worlds. A technology that could cook Jupiter had too many tempting possibilities for interplanetary blackmail. That such a concern had ever been expressed said a good deal about the general attitude toward the Hermians. They were respected for their toughness and engineering skills, and admired for the way in which they had conquered so fearsome a world. But they were not liked, and still less were they completely trusted.